Shalom, Habarim. Hello, friends. Hey, it's good to be back out here. Like Lois said, back out in Montgomery Hall Park, where we gathered on a monthly basis during the worst parts of the pandemic. I remember even meeting the first time here, everybody was fully masked outside, trying to keep our distance, and it feels good. It looks like you guys are sitting in the sun. Excellent. And I was even told today, you know, we've got food here. I'm going to try to keep it brief so that the food doesn't get cold. And we've got these couple pots back here. Hopefully nobody blows any breakers, but we've got this meal planned for today. We've just got all these things here in abundance, and I am ready to celebrate the goodness of the Lord, the goodness of all that He has given to us. But I also realize that as we are gathered here today, that there are many things in the world not going as we would like them. The economy is kind of in the tank right now. Have you noticed that? Economy is not going well. They're talking about this, a recession coming up, and a little bit scary for many of us, but I received some really good tips recently. Somebody told me that I should be investing in stocks, so I've been investing in stocks lately. I know that's a little bit scary, but I've been investing in stocks. So recently, I purchased a bunch of chicken stock. Then I got a lot. I know there are some people who question that. Then I bought a lot of beef stock. And recently, this is a stock tip for you all. Recently, I purchased some vegetable stock. Yeah, my whole family thinks I'm an idiot. They think I'm just throwing the money away. But I guarantee you, you come back to me, talk to me in a couple of months, maybe a year or two, and I will be a billionaire. That's right, a billionaire. Somebody asked me the other day where I keep all my dad jokes. Like, you guys have this collection of dad jokes. And I say, yes, of course, I have a place where I keep my dad jokes. I keep them in a database. Stop with the boy in joke. All right. Yes, Roger says. No, really, it is good to be back out here celebrating God's abundance and being here with you people. But I also realize that we have this abundance of food, but I heard recently of a scenario that you've probably been involved in. And coming out of this scenario, we realize that there are two different kinds of people. All right, keep that in mind. Two different kinds of people. Maybe you've been at a party, and you're looking around, and there's a lot of people that are there. You don't maybe know everybody, but there's a lot of people gathered in this one building, and then all at once, the food shows up. You didn't bring food to this party. They were going to provide the pizza. So you're at this party, the pizza guy shows up, and you see him carry in the boxes, and you realize immediately that that is nowhere near enough pizza for everybody in the building. Have you been in this situation? Well, I'm told that there are two different kinds of people in this situation. There are people that see that there won't be enough pizza, and they go out and they fill their plate. They make sure to get 3, 4, maybe 5 pieces of pizza. And there's other people that see that it won't be enough pizza, and they decide they're going to go and get one piece. They're going to go and get the smallest piece. They're going to make sure that everybody has a chance to get some pizza. Now, I don't know which kind of person you are, but I know that I have tended to be the kind of person who loads up in that situation. And we know that this stuff happens. We know that at times there are things that are just scarcely available. We go back a couple of years, and how many people remember the shortage of toilet paper early on in the pandemic? Some of us made investments in other things at that point. How many people bought a bidet in that period? Yes. Don't raise your hands. there was a shortage in toilet paper. And then whenever the vaccine finally came out, how many people do you know that jumped the line to make sure they got their vaccine because they were afraid there wouldn't be enough? And then COVID tests, the rapid tests, they started distributing those, and people began to hoard those as well. I think this is actually a part of human nature, that when things are in short supply, we tend to try to keep as much of that for ourselves. We want to make sure that we get our portion. We want to make sure we get more than our share. We want to make sure that we get as much pizza as we're going to need before they run out. But what I want to talk to you today is about the abundance of God and the myth of scarcity. Now, I know whenever I start talking about abundance, it's a little bit scary, especially I'm a little scared of that word, because so often we hear people talk about abundance and they go immediately to the prosperity gospel. If you just pray enough, if you just live your life good, if you live clean life, if you send your tithe check to 555 Spring Hill Road, that's not actually my address, but send your tithe here, then God will bless you with abundance. God will bless you with a bigger house, a mansion with a 4-car garage and a Lamborghini in each of those garages, and you will have health, you will have wealth, if only you do these things. That's not what I'm talking about today when I talk about the abundance of God. And really, I don't know how you arrive at that kind of theology by following a homeless Jewish preacher, a carpenter who had no place to lay his head, a man who was crucified at age 33. What I'm talking about today is how God has given enough for us. We have enough for our needs, just not enough for our greed. So let us look at the abundance of God in a story that Lois read for us from Joel chapter 2. Now, if I'm being entirely honest, I don't think that I have ever preached a sermon from Joel, the book of Joel at all. Have you ever heard a sermon on Joel? Like, the only place that we know Joel from, that I know Joel from, is that Joel is quoted in the book of Acts. So your young men will have vision, your old men will dream, something like that. That comes from the book of Joel. But what we find today is we find the story of God's abundance. But that story of abundance doesn't come out of nowhere. That comes out of a story of scarcity. If you go back to Joel chapter 1, it tells the story about a locust infestation. Now, as I was reading through this book of Joel, and I'm reading about this locust, it talks about the locust generation after generation coming and just decimating the fields and the vineyards of the Israelites. As I read through that, I thought of the most recent Jurassic Park movie. Anybody seen the most recent Jurassic Park? Okay, I may ruin it for you, but here's a little thing. They bring dinosaurs back. The dinosaurs are dangerous. The people get away from the dinosaurs and they say, "Phew, we made a mistake. We're not doing that again." And then a couple years later, they do that again. But one of the side stories in the new Jurassic Park movie is about these locusts. They are these prehistoric, these genetically altered locusts. They're huge, and they go from city to city, town to town, decimating the field. Within a period of days, they have wiped out the entire food supply for the community. And they don't leave anything behind. They wipe out the wheat, the barley, the corn. They strip the trees of their bark, even of their leaves. There's nothing left behind. And this is the image that I get from Joel chapter 1. The locusts have lived there for several generations. They have wiped out the people's food supply, and the people just feel broken. Joel chapter 1, verse 12. They even use this decimation as a metaphor. As Joel says, "Surely the people's joy is withered away." Withered away just like the grapes, withered away like the olives, the barley, the wheat, the grains. But you see, Joel doesn't stop there. We go to chapter 2, and all at once there's this message of hope. God speaks to Joel and says, "I will send the rains, and your vineyards will be restored. Your grains will once again pile high on the threshing floor. Your vats will flow with oil and with wine like they once did." This is a promise of God's abundance. So we see this time and time throughout the prophets. We find these stories where God is critiquing the people. There's a prophetic message that they are turning their backs on God. They are turning their backs on the most vulnerable people among them, the widows, the orphan, and the poor. And in the middle of this, God says, "But," and I'm already inappropriate this morning. This is one of God's big buts, right? God has this big but. He says, "But I'm not going to abandon you. But I am a God of abundance. But I am about to restore all these things. Your vats will be filled. Your threshing floors will be overflowing." The people have experienced a time of scarcity, and now they were going to experience a time of abundance. So I find this tension, this real tension within the Bible. We have these stories of scarcity and the promise of abundance. And I realize the reason that we believe in scarcity is because we've experienced it. We all know what it's like to go to look for toilet paper and see the shelves are empty. We know that there are people around the world that don't have food right now. We can go to Ukraine. I wouldn't suggest going to Ukraine right now, but if you go to Ukraine, you would find that there are people who don't have the things that they need to survive. We hear stories about starving children in China or Africa or wherever, and fill in the blank. And we know about people in our own community. There's a reason why we're raising funds and trying to gather goods for SACRA right now. It's because there's people in our own community that don't have enough. We have to hold that scarcity in tension with these promises of God that says there is enough. We do live in abundance. And the challenge that I see is, yes, there is a reality that there are things that are available in scarcity. There is scarcity around us. But the problem that I hear and that I feel is that when we understand that things are in scarce supply, we tend to overreact and hoard them for ourselves. To hoard that toilet paper, to hoard the food, the money, and the goods. So my question is, are we believing the myth of scarcity, or are we believing the promise that God is a God of abundance? If we live in that myth of scarcity, we're going to hoard for ourselves. When we believe in the abundance, we share with those in need. I'm going to draw a little bit from an article by Old Testament professor Walter Brueggemann. It's called The Liturgy of Abundance and the Myth of Scarcity. And I can send out the link if anybody wants to read this whole article. It's available online. But Brueggemann walks through the story of the Israelites coming out of Egypt. And we're going to pick up with this story in Exodus chapter 16. I'm going to need some help out there. I'm going to need you to help me with some words. We know that the Israelites, they came out of Egypt. They came out of captivity. They came through the Red Sea. And they begin wandering in the wilderness. And when they're wandering in the wilderness, they begin to get hungry. So they pray to God. They ask for some sort of help. First, they complain. Let's be honest. They're hungry. They complain about it. And Moses goes and he prays to God. And God says, I will rain down bread from heaven. And the people wake up the next morning, and there's this white stuff on the ground, and it's kind of crispy. And you know what they call that stuff? They call it manna. And the people see the manna there on the ground, and they say, what is it? And I learned this week. It's interesting. The word manna is actually derived from the Hebrew word for what is it? So what they're essentially told that they're going to be eating for the next 40 years is called what is it? And that made me think of high school when we would have this thing called what is it on a bun? Anybody else have what is it on a bun? Essentially, it's an opportunity for them to kind of clean out the freezer and the cafeteria. But I used to laugh about that. Like, if you don't know what it is, then I'm not going to know. But here they're told they're going to eat this manna for the next 40 years. But they're given some very specific instructions. They're told they are to gather the manna that they're going to eat that day in the morning. But they are not to gather any extra manna, just as much as their family's going to need that day. And you remember what happens if they gathered more, and a couple of people didn't listen. Don't get yell it out for me. What happened when they gathered more manna than they needed for one day? Absolutely. Does that sound appealing or what? The manna rotted and it attracted the maggots. And the way Brueggemann explains this is these people were living in this mentality of scarcity. And we can't blame them because they just came from this period where they were hungry. They had experienced scarcity. But God said they no longer need to fear scarcity. So they began to hoard this food, hoard this manna, hoard this what is it? And it molded and rotted and drew maggots. They were to live by what God had promised them. Manna each and every morning. Except for there was one time when they weren't supposed to collect. Anybody remember what day they were not supposed to collect? Dunk it again. Ooh, dangerous, dangerous. I tricked you. The seventh day, which would have been Saturday. We'll let it go. All right, I see your wheels are turning. That's okay. The seventh day. So on the sixth day, they were to collect double the amount. And then on the seventh day, they didn't collect any. So that was for them to be a Sabbath. It was to be a pause in the work. Now you have to think about it like this. The Israelites didn't have a Sabbath before that. When they were in Egypt, they didn't get to take the seventh day off. They were still making bricks and building pyramids on the seventh day. And they hadn't yet received the Ten Commandments. That doesn't happen for another four chapters or so into the book of Exodus. So they hadn't been told to remember the seventh day. But here God was telling them, double on the sixth day, and on the seventh day, take a break. What God is saying to them is that they need a pause to take a break from the cycle of scarcity. Because we all need to step back from this every now and then. To remember that God will provide. To remember that we don't need more money. That we don't need more manna. That we don't need more toilet paper. That we don't need more of all of these things. That God will provide. And we look throughout the Bible, we have all these examples where food is used. And you can't read the Bible without getting hungry sometimes. You know, we're reading through the New Testament, and one of my favorite stories is the story of the little boy and his lunch. The way the story goes, it's told differently in different Gospels, is that Jesus is out preaching and teaching. He's out in kind of the wilderness. He's far away from any restaurants. There's no McDonald's, no Burger King's, no Arby's, nothing like that. And people are starting to get hungry. And there's thousands of people. And you know what happens when you have a crowd of people and they're getting hungry? They get a little cranky. I can see some of you looking back at me right now like, finish it up, Pastor. Come on now. People get a little angry. If you say something they don't like, then all at once they can turn on you. So the disciples come to Jesus. They say, people are getting hungry. You need to send them out of here. They're going to turn on you. And Jesus says, feed them. Sure. We look. There's no McDonald's. No fast food. Nothing available. Jesus says, no, go out there and ask how much food's available. And they find one little boy who has a lunch of fish and barley loaves. I'm guessing he didn't pack his own lunch that day. And the little boy brings this gift, this lunch, to Jesus. And Jesus takes this and he multiplies it. And is able to feed thousands of people from one boy's lunch. In this system of scarcity, Jesus provides an abundance. And there are 12 baskets left over out of all this food. Time and time again, we read that Jesus is the bread of life. And we have this example, we have this liturgy, this ritual of sharing the bread and the cup around the table or in this group. Jesus gives this way of remembering him. It is the sharing of food. We find things like Jesus saying, I am the bread of life, and we're reminded that he has come, he says in the book of John, I have come that you may have life and you may have it in abundance. So we have all of these examples of the abundance of God, not simply a scarcity of goods. And I realize that this is not simply about food. There's so many things that God provides to us in abundance. How often do we find ourselves trying to hoard God's love? How often do we say we deserve God's love, but not that group? How often do we say we deserve God's grace, but not the Baptists, not the Methodists, not the Catholics? They don't get God's grace. No, that's for us. That's for those who have it all figured out. No, there is no scarcity of love, no scarcity of grace. It is an abundance. So as I'm thinking through this process of God's abundance and this myth of scarcity this week, I'm reminded of a story from probably 13, 14 years ago, before we had children. And I had this friend, he came from South Africa, and he invited me to his home one evening. I think Sonny was out of town on a weekend, and he said, Kevin, come to my house. I'm going to cook you an authentic South African meal. And you know I'm going to be there, right? Like, yeah, I'll be there. He says, all right, come at 5 o'clock. I will prepare this meal for you. And he told me all these fancy dishes he was going to make. None of it meant anything to me, but I was all excited anyway because I was going to have a free meal, something exotic. And I show up at 5 o'clock just like he said, and I walk in the door, and nothing has been prepared. He hasn't even started yet. And I get a little bit, well, how do I feel at that point? What do you think? Hungry, yes.